Welcome to Supernatural Stocks on MoneyWeb with your host, The Finance Ghost. This is your weekly fix of equity analysis designed for stock pickers. Whether local or international, you can expect a mix of news and my ideas about what I'm seeing in the markets. The retail sector never ceases to capture the imagination of investors. That's just as well because it's a fascinating space that is a vital source of employment in our economy and in many economies around the world. There is no debate around how important the retail sector is to our daily lives, but why does it tend to get so much interest from investors? It could be as simple as familiarity bias, as we see the stores in our local shopping centers and are naturally drawn to the logos of our favorite retailers on our investing and trading apps. Or perhaps investors are interested in retailers because they believe that they are easier to understand, or at least easier than the far more opaque business models in industrials or technology, for example. After all, part of the due diligence process for a retailer can be to just take a drive to your local shopping center and walk around the stores. In reality, it's probably a combination of these factors. But what many investors don't realize is that the retail sector is fraught with risk. Sure, the brands may be household names, but they are quite capable of creating paupers out of investors just as effectively as they can create kings. This week, I'm covering a couple of the features of the retail sector that make it so risky. And also so exciting. The management team of the company that you're looking at should be a primary consideration in any investment decision, as you're ultimately investing in executives who will be the stewards of your capital. But in some sectors, the CEO has far more of an impact than in others. Retail is one of those sectors. To understand this, let's first consider something completely different, like a bank. When a new CEO is announced at a bank, what you're really getting is a new captain of the ship who will point the highly capable existing crew in a particular direction. The banks are filled with specialists who are really good at what they do, regardless of who is in the top seat. There will be some tweaks here and there in terms of capital allocation, but the group executive's role is mainly to take a helicopter view and see how all the pieces fit together in the bank. In other words, it's rather unlikely that a new CEO will have a huge impact on a bank, but rather an incremental impact that builds up over time. The business is filled with highly skilled people who have relationships with key clients. There's really only so much influence that a top CEO can have. Now, this isn't to say that retailers don't have talented people, of course. The difference is the foot soldier to decision maker ratio, with retailers having a nexus of power at head office and then an army of staff members who work in the stores. This means that decisions made by the CEO and the top execs get rolled out across the footprint, sometimes for better, sometimes for worse. The key here is that the CEO can have a substantial impact on exactly how the retailer performs and what the in-store experience looks like. To bring the point home, the equivalent in a bank would be the CEO's approach to deals and credit being rolled out to every deal that the bank does, from the property finance division all the way through to the trading desks. Clearly, that's impossible. Banks have key decision makers throughout the structure, with only a small proportion of staff who don't have to make judgment calls. And automation is replacing those roles at pace anyway. It's therefore little wonder that the retail sector is a common source of turnaround stories. If the previous CEO chased the wrong strategy across the store footprint, it's like a huge flock of birds changing direction at the same time and then flying straight into a cliff. Having a large number of stores, or birds for that matter, means nothing in terms of diversification if all the stores do the same thing, if all the birds fly in the same direction. The risk is therefore the extent of the role played by the CEO, along with the influence of other top execs on the operations. Remember, risk is a measure of volatility, and what could be more volatile than the decisions of an individual executive or just a handful of people who make the final call on so many important things? The next risk I want to talk about is changing consumer preferences. As we speak about the volatility of how people behave, we now reach the risk of consumers, specifically shifting consumer preferences and what it means for retailers. Sometimes the change is related to the products themselves. Clothing store executives, for example, can tell you horror stories about what happens when a retailer gets the fashion wrong for a season, or loses its way in terms of appealing to its core market. This tells us something about the difference between discretionary and defensive retail. You see, the more discretionary categories like fashionable clothing can achieve higher gross margins, but that's because of the risk of inventory obsolescence and weak sales being much higher. Because of that, the reward needs to be much higher in the form of gross margins. The simplest way to understand this is if you put yourself in the shoes of a grocery store manager. You don't need to spend your days wondering whether people will be interested in bread and milk. Instead, you just need to focus on the basics. Stock on the shelf at the best possible price. This isn't to say that grocery retail is easy, of course. Far from it. It just means that the product risks, on average, tend to be lower. In clothing, you need to have the right size and the right style, in addition to having stock availability and a welcoming environment with good service. It's little wonder that clothing attracts a gross margin of 60% or more for full price sales, whereas basic grocery items are lucky to get 20%. The more lucrative the product, the riskier it is. This inherent risk is the reason why investors can end up with a position that is deep in the red, despite investing in a clothing store that the family has shopped at for decades. You have to be extra careful with discretionary retailers where the risks, and therefore the opportunities, are higher. And don't for a second think that grocery stores are immune to this risk. Sure, the basic products might be quite safe, but what about all the other stuff? Just think about how Woolworths Food tries to differentiate itself, sometimes with great success, and other times with food offerings that are either too expensive or don't resonate with customers. And it's not just them, of course. Think about all the risks that Checkers has had to take to really take the fight to Woolworths. Aside from product preferences, there's another huge change that is visible everywhere. Consumer preferences in how they actually do their shopping. We've moved on from a world of in-store versus e-commerce sales. It's now omnichannel retail. And you can see this in retailers across the world. In fact, in a recent conversation I had with ShopRite CEO Pieter Engelbrecht after their latest results, I confirmed with him that we've now reached a point where every new Checkers opened by the ShopRite group is viewed through an omnichannel lens and how it would support the 60-60 business, not just traditional metrics like footfall at the location where it will be opened. So what is the risk for investors in this omnichannel world? Well, the obvious one is that you might just pick the wrong retailer entirely, the one that got left behind while competitors moved forward with the correct strategy. But there's another risk as well, the risk of poor return on capital, which could be the reality for laggards in the market who are now throwing money at the problem in the hope that they can scale to profitability in omnichannel. Market leaders also carry this risk, of course, with retailers not exactly having a stellar reputation for their capital allocation decisions. When you layer this on with all of the risks of consumer preferences, and like I said earlier, the fact that so few people often make up the decision-making body of a retailer, you end up in a situation where, yes, the sector can reward you, but goodness knows it can also hurt you. In summary, by all means go shopping in this space, but be cautious. The retail sector has a lot of really interesting companies and opportunities. Just don't lose sight of the risks in this space. And above all else, don't be tempted to use only your anecdotal experiences with each retailer as the truth in your research process. As always, you need to look across the numbers and the management team while taking into account what you can observe around you at the local mall and what you can learn from speaking to friends and family about where they do their shopping. And of course, the valuation plays a huge role as well. A great retailer at a high price could underperform a poor retailer at a bargain price, at least from an investment perspective over the near term. Over the long term though, the entry price matters a lot less than how well the underlying business actually does. So a buy and forget strategy tends to benefit from investors choosing the best companies for their portfolios, even if the valuations tend to be a little bit spicy. And one thing we know for sure, retail is a very, very interesting and ever-changing space, and perhaps that, above all else, is why it captures the imagination of investors. There's no such thing as an opportunity without risk, and these are merely my opinions on the stocks covered herein. Make sure that you do your own research, form your own views on the market when doing anything in your portfolio. Nothing in supernatural stocks should be taken as advice.